Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and this is our View of the Opposition show. As I talk to someone who covers Fulham's opposition for the upcoming match, this episode I'll be talking to Chris Stouffer, who is an Everton supporter and a member of the School of Science radio podcast. He is on to give us the Everton perspective on the upcoming match. Before we get on any further and get to talking about this match, I have to bring on Chris to the show. Chris, welcome to Cottage Talk. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Yeah, hey, Russ. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, listen, I look forward to doing this show with you, and I've listened to your podcast. It's very interesting. Tell the Fulham supporters a little bit about the podcast and your history of supporting Everton.
Yeah, so I have so my soccer origin story, if you will, is that my dad is actually from Brazil. And so if you know anything about Brazil, they're soccer crazy down there. And growing up, dad was not really interested in basketball or baseball or American football. We watched a lot of soccer. And I think my first soccer memories were the 2002 World Cup, where I was 13 years old or something like that. And dad would wake me up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to watch Brazil's matches over in Korea. I believe it was Korea and Japan that hosted that World Cup. So I got the bug pretty early in life, and I came on to supporting Everton after the 2010 World Cup when I fell in love with Tim Howard. So yep. That's the short version.
Okay, very good. It's funny because I'll just tell you, everyone that listens to this podcast will know that my connection to Fulham begins with Clint Dempsey. Clint Dempsey used to play for the New England Revolution and then decided to go to Fulham, and that's how I got connected to Fulham. And then, of course, right afterwards, they went through a huge relegation battle, and I really got into Fulham. So I understand the connection of a player, like you said, of Tim Howard with Everton. All right, let's get into the show. And let's start with talking about the season so far. We'll do it in two parts. Let's start with the first four matches for Everton, which has Everton having one win and three draws. So talk about what's been going on in those first four matches through your eyes.
Yeah, so the beginning of the season started with a lot of promise, particularly against the Wolves game, where Everton really sort of dominated that match despite having the captain, Phil Jagielka, sent off in the first half. And the big takeaway from that match, obviously, if you followed any of it, was that Richarlison scored twice in his debut and kind of got the hype train rolling. And even with 10 men, we looked really good in attack. The defending was okay, but you know, when you lose a center back and kind of have to move pieces around, it gets a little bit more complicated. But Everton probably should have gotten all 3 points from that game if it weren't for their spotty set piece defense, which I'm sure we'll touch on. Yep. But that really got folks excited about Marco Silva and excited about Richarlison, and they won the follow up match against Southampton, which should not have been as close as it was, and we really felt like things were off and running. And then Richarlison against Bournemouth in the third match lost his head a little bit and headbutted Adam Smith. He got sent off, so that gave us 2 red cards in 3 games. And that's where we've kind of started to hit this little skid here. And, you know, there are issues going around. We've had a lot of injuries. Everton lead the Premier League injury table by a lot.
I've seen the injuries.
Yes. Yeah, last I checked, we had 12 players on the shelf compared to the next closest team, which had 7. So that, you know, I'm hesitant to use excuses like that just because Right. Every team has injuries, but that has affected Marco Silva's ability to mold the team in his image because he hasn't had all the new players that he signed. He hasn't had everybody in training and that kind of thing. So the early part of the season was a little bit, you know, it's kind of 2 steps forward, one step back. But overall, it was encouraging, I think, and since then, it's been a little bit spotty.
Okay, well, let's talk about the 2 losses, and I listened to your podcast. Very interesting. I would highly recommend everyone listening to your podcast that are interested in Everton also want to know a little bit about what you think about Fulham for this upcoming match. But let's talk about first West Ham. As I was listening, you guys were talking about the mistakes that you made. But in the Arsenal match, it was more about a talent issue. So talk about, through your eyes, these 2 losses.
Yeah, so in the West Ham game, Everton, I don't feel like many people would argue that Everton have the talent advantage over West Ham. We you know, you can argue whether or not you prefer Marco Silva or Manuel Pellegrini. That's fine. That's whatever. But, you know, we're at Goodison Park against a team that until that match had been by far the worst in the Premier League. That's up like a -8 goal differential. And Silva came out and had us press West Ham, which in a vacuum, that's probably a good idea. Their midfielders and their defenders are not especially talented. And if you feel like you can push them into a mistake, we'd make some chances. And the press just didn't work out. We kind of overcommitted ourselves in the midfield, which led to a couple, you know, if you press and go for the ball and then miss, well, West Ham all of a sudden have an opportunity. And they, to be fair to the Hammers, they took their chances, but Everton really wasted a good chance to get 3 points there at home. And it was rough seeing because Andre Yarmolenko, who's West Ham's starting right winger at this point in time, has been linked to Everton for years, going back 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
And, of course, he finally makes it to the Premier League, not with Everton, and he scores a brace on his first trip to Goodison Park. So it's kind of peak Everton there. In terms of Arsenal, Silva's plan really worked to perfection in terms of it was very similar to West Ham. He wanted to press Arsenal's defenders high, but he changed the personnel to a couple of players in Tom Davis and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who are probably a little bit better equipped to do that press. They're more athletic. They're a little bit quicker than Morgan Schneiderlin and Cenk Tosun. And right from the off, Dominic Calvert-Lewin had a chance in on Petr Cech in the second minute that he should have scored that was created by the press. He did not. We had several other chances through Theo Walcott later in the game. And we did not take those chances. And then, you know, you turn around and Arsenal get half a chance in the second half through Alexander Lacazette, and he puts it in the back of the net. And that's really kind of illustrative of the difference. But the sort of gap between Everton and that top six is that Arsenal, for all of their troubles that they've been having early this season, they still have those players who can fix it in a split second, and we do not.
I'm glad that you said that, because that's been one of the things that I've noticed a great deal coming back to the Premier League, the differences. And you're talking about, obviously, a team like Everton trying to get in the top six, and it can be a player that has that magical moment. And we've run into that already. We, you know, again, had Kieran Trippier, an incredible free kick for a goal. These situations you see in the Premier League,
exactly,
that are players that are able to do that at such a high level that you don't see as often. We didn't in the championship. So you have to be at the top of your game. You can't make mistakes, as we're finding out. Obviously, a lot of the things that have happened to Fulham in a bad way have been mistakes.
And I would wager that in the championship, Fulham was the team with those players, right? Alexander Mitrovic and Ryan Sessegnon.
Yes, absolutely. We were the ones that had the talented players, like you said, of Mitrovic that could change games, Sessegnon, Kearney, obviously, that would really be the difference makers. And now we're going against teams that have those difference makers, and you have to be cognizant of everything, because if you make a mistake, if you put yourself into a bad situation, you will get hurt. And that's what I've noticed so far. It sounds like that's what's happened in this game for you.
Yeah, the margin of error is just so small in the Premier League.
That's basically where I'm getting at. Yeah.
Yeah, you cannot screw around even for a second. And we can afford to, you know, against teams like Southampton, for example, in the second match.
Right.
We screwed around for 45 minutes and still won the game, but just because our roster's a lot better than theirs,
right,
and we're at home. And then you do the same thing against Arsenal, and all of a sudden you lose 2-0, and you're like, what happened?
Sure. Then it becomes a situation, like you said, it's a talent issue that they just have players that can just do those elite things that teams mid-table and lower than that just can't do. And then, you know, that's what happens. And like you said, the margin of error is very small. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Marco Silva. And I just want to get a rating from you with his job so far, with 10 being the highest and 1 obviously being the lowest. And you've already talked about he's dealing with situations with injuries. So obviously you can factor that in, because he probably hasn't been able to really put his style to the test yet, to really, really where he wants it to be. So I'm curious your rating for him as a manager so far. And just tell us a little bit about his style too.
Yeah, so if I had to give him a rating from 1 to 10, I would probably say 7. He's been very flexible, which is a nice change from Sam Allardyce. He seems to know how to get the best out of his players, and the players seem to enjoy playing for him. you know, we've had a couple of off-field problems that with players like Adamola Lookman and some and stuff like that. But he likes to play a 4-3-3, and the only variations that you'll really see from that are kind of how they play the 4-3-3, not really a formation change. He won't come out in a 4-2-3-1 or a back five or anything like that. It's pretty much a strict 4-3-3 that is kind of fluid in the way that it approaches the game. If I had to make any criticisms of Marco so far, I don't think that he fully understands the players at his disposal. Because while he did make quite a few signings of his own this summer, most of those have not been available yet. So he's dealing with the players from older administrations. And I think he needs a little bit more time to kind of learn about those players and learn the best way to utilize them. Because using an example of Everton's midfield, Idrissa Gueye, Gylfi Sigurdsson, and Morgan Schneiderlin being the top three players there, all three in their own right, excellent players, all three players that have talent, players that can fill specific roles, and they seem like they would fit together very well as a threesome, and yet the midfield has kind of been Everton's biggest problem so far this year. And I think that Marco just has not figured out how he wants to use those three players. And so I'll be interested to see if that's something that he can fix moving forward, or if the return of Andre Gomez from injury on loan from Barcelona kind of allows him to address that problem. But overall, I think we've been very pleased, and there's kind of a sense around the fan base that it's hard to judge him completely on these first set of games, given the circumstances.
I totally agree with that. I think he needs more time to really mold the team that he wants. And it's funny because I think the same situation is going on with Fulham. Even though Savisa has been the head coach for 2.5 seasons now, this is his first time in the Premier League. He has a bunch of new players, and he's trying to see exactly what he has to what this team will be. The team that Fulham are right now is not the team that it's going to be by the end of the season, for a myriad of reasons. But one of them has to do with the coach learning the Premier League, and also the players that he brought in to bring it all together to figure everything out. And we are definitely going through a learning experience as fans watching this team grow. And they will get better and better, I think, as the season goes on. But let's move on. Let's start to learn more about Everton. I'm actually going to start with going through strengths and weaknesses with you, and then we'll go to key players. And what I want to give you here is I want to go to whoscored.com. I like doing this, Chris.
Sure.
See what they have to say about your team and see if they match up with what you know. Start with strengths. This is what they say. And I want to get your opinion if you agree with what whoscored.com says. About Everton's strengths, attacking set pieces, attacking down the wings, creating chances using through balls, and stealing the ball from the opposition. Those are listed as the strengths. Do you agree with that? And are there any other strengths that you would mention?
I would say, for the most part, I agree with that. Attacking set pieces is pretty much solely down to Gylfi Sigurdsson, who, as you probably know, is an absolute wizard off dead ball situations.
Tremendous.
Really one of the best in the world. And, you know, I hesitate to say anyone at Everton is one of the best in the world at anything. But if we're being honest with being honest with ourselves, he truly is. And the numbers bear that out. It doesn't really matter who's on the end of the chance. Gylfi will give you a chance to put it in the back of the net the majority of the time. In terms of attacking down the wings, I think that's pretty evident as well. Richarlison and Theo Walcott, while they're not very creative players in terms of their passing output, they're excellent at scoring the ball. And it's been kind of interesting because there have been a lot of complaints about Everton's striker this year, Chink Tosun, and how he's not scored yet and that kind of thing. But the reality is that's not what the system is set up to do. Tosun kind of takes a more creative role, which allows Walcott and Richarlison to shine in attack, and they can focus on shooting and getting into those good positions that allow them to get on the end of chances. Don't really agree with creating chances using through balls, simply because we don't play a lot of our attack through the middle, where a lot of those through balls may traditionally come.
It's not wide.
Right, exactly. You'll see most of our attack coming through the middle, and because that kind of plays into my next comment about a strength that's not mentioned here, and that's Everton's fullbacks. The signing of Lucas Digne from Barcelona, while a lot of people questioned it, and just because, you know, Digne he's kind of lost his job at PSG, he lost his job at Barcelona, or never really got his job at Barcelona, rather. But he's been absolutely outstanding for Everton. And Seamus Coleman has been one of the best right backs in the Premier League for 5 or 6 years now. And so that kind of emphasizes the attack through the wings. Both the right side and the left side are tremendous when they're on their game. Stealing the ball from the opposition, Idrissa Gueye is kind of mini N'Golo Kanté, if you will. He's absolutely superb at interceptions and tackles. I think he already leads the entire league in tackles by players of any position. So I'll be interested to see him up against Fulham's midfield, because I rate those players from Fulham quite a lot, and it should be an interesting battle.
Okay, very good. And to go along with this, I'm just going to mention the style that I list, and then we'll go through the weaknesses. Attacking down the right, attacking down the left, play with width, attempt crosses often. Opponents play aggressively against them, and they are listed as aggressive. Everything that you said kind of backs up the style that WhoScored.com says you have.
Yeah, it does, and I think I don't see any reason to dispute that, especially coming up on Saturday where, Fulham so far this season, I think they're gettable down the wing from what I can tell.
Okay. Let's now go to Everton's weaknesses. Defending set pieces just listed as weak, protecting the lead very weak. So your thoughts on those two weaknesses, and that's it.
Yeah. So protecting the lead, I think has been that's a bit of a misnomer, because a couple of the leads that we've blown have been after a player was sent off, which obviously makes defending far harder. So, I mean, yes, technically Everton did blow those leads, but I have a hard time really judging their ability to hold the lead too much when it's 11v10. Defending set pieces is just an enormous issue for the club right now. Marco Silva has tried to institute a zonal marking system on set pieces, and it has frankly not come off in the slightest. Everton have given up, I believe, 11 goals this season. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think that's right. They've given up 11 goals this season, and 5 of them have been off set pieces. So, you know, even if you don't erase all 5 of those set piece goals allowed, you take away 2 or 3, and all of a sudden we probably have 8-9 points instead of 6.
Okay, very good. All right, now let's talk about key players. You can go in many different directions for Everton. So when you're looking at Fulham, and we're going to get more into getting your thoughts on Fulham, who do you see as your key players?
So I'm going to start with an obvious one, and that's Richarlison, who just came back from suspension last week against Arsenal. You know, we talked a little bit ago about these players who you can just rely on to fix your problem. And so far, it's a small sample size, sure. But Richarlison has been Everton's great equalizer. If you're having a problem in attack, if you can't break another team down, let's just shovel the ball wide left and let him do something. And, you know, a couple times that's worked, and he's a game breaker. And Richarlison has really proven to be effective cutting in from that left side and either pulling off shots or just drawing defenders to him. And so I'll be interested to see how that works against Fulham. Another key player, I will say, is going to be Morgan Schneiderlin if he starts, which he should. He's very key to Everton retaining possession and recycling the ball. He's one of the better passers in the Premier League from a deep-lying position. And it's kind of one of those things with Everton for the past 2 years since Schneiderlin came over from United. If Morgan is playing well, Everton is playing well. If he's not, we're not. And the consistency with which that is true is a little bit startling. But it's also nice to where we know we can rely on him.
Okay. That's going to be interesting when we talk about the central midfield battle. I want to really touch on that when we get to that part, when we go through matchups. All right. Let's now get your thoughts on Fulham. Now, I've listened to your podcast. I know where you're going to go on this. You share your thoughts on Fulham, and then we'll talk about key players for Fulham that concern you for this match.
Yeah, so Fulham are interesting to me because it appears that they have a very stated and committed and are committed to a certain style that they play in. They like to play open. They like to create chances, and which I respect, right? Because you see a lot of teams that come up from the Championship, that want to just park the bus. They don't really want to play football.
Yeah, Fulham aren't going to do that. They're not going to park the bus.
Exactly.
That's it on that.
And I enjoy that, honestly. Like, that's because I think that if you're building for the long term, that's the way that you're going to actually end up having success and moving your club forward up the table. not just, you know, praying that you get to keep that TV payment and for another year. The, you know, the downside to that is kind of, unfortunately, one of the Fulham games that I have watched was that Manchester City match. And you do kind of have to question the wisdom of deciding to play that way at Manchester City. And I think the results bore that out. Playing that way can expose you defensively. And if your defense is A, not the most talented in the world, which, you know, we can argue about that, but
sure.
The really what my concern more than the talent issue when you play that way is it's early in the season and there's a lot of new players in that defense and who have not played together for very long. And all of a sudden you're asking them to be stretched very thin. That I think Everton can take advantage of.
Okay. The one thing that I want to mention about that, because I knew we were going to talk about the defense, and we'll talk about some defensive numbers that back up exactly what you're talking about here. And listen, I watched the Manchester City match. We talked about this on Cottage Talk, that we're hoping at some point that Savica Jokanović finds a middle ground, Chris, where sure.
Yeah.
We're not going to change our style, but there's going to be that way that we can play that can be a not so gung-ho, but can keep the what they're doing, but be a little bit more defensive.
Yeah, and I think Burnley, or excuse me, Bournemouth would be an instructive example.
Yeah.
Because Bournemouth are an entertaining team. They like to take the attack to you on the front foot, but that you never feel like it's out of control with Eddie right. Howe's team, and I like that.
Right, and the reason why I'm bringing this up now, because the Watford match, similar to playing against Manchester City, you know, a team that can press us and cause us problems, cause a mistake early on. Here we are talking about mistakes. And Savica Jokanović made a change at halftime. He changed the formation. First time he's really changed the formation from the 4-3-3 to the 4-2-3-1. So I think that's an acknowledgement that he's trying to change things. And it actually helped defensively with some of the other players that he brought on. And Fulham were a different team in the second half. And to the next point, he actually used a 3-4-3 in the Carabao Cup, which is very interesting. Because, again, it just shows me, Chris, that he acknowledges the issues that they're having defensively, and sure. I think he's trying to fix it.
Right. And that's a good sign if he's being proactive, and I think that's the right way to go about it.
Okay, very good. All right. Who are your key players that you're concerned about for Fulham? It's funny because I was listening to the podcast, and you guys are talking about Sessegnon, and I understand why you're talking about Sessegnon. But no one mentioned Mitrovic. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Mitrovic scares the daylights out of me. I'll just be honest. He feels kind of like a ticking time bomb in that, you know, he might get a red card, but he might also score a hat trick, and you never really know which one of those it's going to be, particularly with all the injuries in Everton's defense. Michael yep. Keane came back last week, but he came back from a fractured skull. So that he was playing with a head bandage on, and you know, Mitrovic, if memory serves, is fairly decent in the air.
Yes, could become he's very good in the air.
And Kurt Zuma has actually fit in very well, but he and Keane have not played a lot together. And if Yerry Mina makes his debut on Saturday, which seems like it could happen, he's not played much with Michael Keane either. I think there's a real opportunity here for Mitrovic to make a difference. And I'm a little bit concerned about that matchup moving into Saturday.
Again, I'm not trying to get you to go in that direction, but I was just curious your thoughts on Mitro, because every time I've done these shows, everyone's talked about how they're going to handle Mitrovic. And I agree with that because I watch him each and every week, and he's a handful. And he happens to be very good in the air. So that's why when we're going through this and I've watched Everton, I'm like, there's an opportunity for Fulham, and it would be with Mitrovic.
Yeah, and particularly on set pieces, I think, too, with our struggles in that area and
right.
again, the lack of defensive continuity. One of the things with Mitrovic, you know, I watched several of his games in the World Cup and then a couple Fulham games early in this year, and the thing that I'm left with is, why in the world did Newcastle get rid of this guy?
We talked about that a lot, my friend, and it seems to be a situation of style. That he just fits very well into how Jokanović wants to play and did not at all in the way Benitez wanted to play. So that is a big factor in this. And, of course, there's this Serbian situation with Mitrovic and Jokanović that has to help as well. And it's just a perfect fit for us. So that's why it's worked well for us. It did not work for Newcastle United. And I don't think it would work because it is a situation that he just didn't fit into the way Benitez wanted to play. And it just wasn't going to work. So I think everyone got what they wanted out of it. But that's all. That's been the question. Why did Newcastle United let him go?
Yeah, if you have a system that values Solomon Rondon over Alexander Mitrovic, I think I found the problem, but point taken.
Okay, very good. All right. Before we go through matchups, I have something interesting I'm going to share with you.
Okay.
I did this a lot last season, and it's just interesting to look at because I'm not one that goes strictly by stats. I use stats in a way, you know, I think it does help. I think your eyes are your number one thing that you should be looking at, but stats do sometimes back up what you're watching. So I'm
going to
do a little stats comparison with you, Chris. All of this information comes from WhoScored.com. Between Fulham and Everton, where they are in the league in many categories. And then we can talk about it because I just think it's a very good way for us really to get into this match. So let's start here because we're going to start with some defensive stats. And obviously the Fulham stats are not good at all. But let's start with shots per game. And I heard you guys talk about this on your show. Fulham are 19th in the league at 17.2. Everton are 8th at 11.7. Tackles per game, Fulham are tied at 15th with 15, and Everton are 2nd at 19.8, which is very good. Interceptions per game, Fulham are 11th with 10.8, and Everton are 7th with 12. Now, those are just defensive stats. Now, let's go to offensive stats. Goals, Fulham are tied at 10th with 8, and Everton is with them. Shots per game, Fulham are 8th with 14. Everton are 14th at 11.2. Shots on target, Fulham are 8th at 5.3. And Everton are 12th at 4.3. Possession average, Fulham are 7th at 52.8. And Everton are 9th at 50.2. Passing accuracy, this is a stat that we used a great deal on Cottage Talk. Fulham are 5th in the league, which I think is very good at 83.1%. Everton are 14th at 77.1%. Overall rating all the players, Fulham are 14th at 6.64. Everton are 15th at 6.63. That actually surprised me. I just want to mention that. So all these stats I just gave to you, what stands out to you?
So I think it's interesting, right, because you mentioned about using your eyes and then statistics. What I like to think of statistics as the way to prove your eye test.
Okay. Right?
Because you use your eyes to evaluate these things, and then you go and check and see, well, does the math back up what I'm seeing, or do I need to change how I'm looking at this? And I think in the case of Everton and Fulham, the stats kind of bear out what you're seeing, right?
Right.
Fulham's struggles with their defense. And then the interesting thing to me there was in the passing numbers in terms of the completion accuracy.
Yep.
Everton have struggled to move the ball through the midfield, as I mentioned earlier, whereas Fulham have a lot of talent in that midfield between Tom Kearney and your new signing, Sarri from Nice. And so that is, and I'm sure we'll get to this with the matchups, but that is what's going to be interesting to me is that midfield battle.
Right. And I agree with you, and that's why I wanted to share all these stats with you because we can really delve into when we go through the matchups, you look at things. And another factor that I want to ask you before we talk about matchups, I heard you guys talking about this, and you mentioned this already on the last two matches with Everton, the high press. Do you expect Marco Silva to play a high press against Fulham?
I don't especially expect that just because I think that after two consecutive losses employing that tactic, he is going to go away from it. And I think that we'll see Schneiderlin and Tosun draw back in. And they're highly technical players. They're very gifted, but they're not extremely athletic. And Silva's press requires athletes all over the field. So I think you'll see him at least try to get back into more of a possession-based game.
Okay. The reason why I asked that is that teams that have pressed high against Fulham, obviously I'm talking about the last two opponents, had joy, especially Manchester City, as you know. So that's why I was curious what the tactics would be. So you think he's going to go away with it? More concerned about what Everton need to do instead of worrying so much about how to hurt Fulham.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that you know, early in the season when we were getting results, he wasn't pressing quite so much. So I think that
he might just go back to that.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right, let's now go to the matchups. So let's start with Fulham's attack versus Everton's defense. Who do you give the advantage to?
I'm going to give a, I think I'm going to give a slight advantage to Fulham simply because, as I mentioned, the continuity in terms of personnel has been up and down for Everton. I'm not sure that we've used the same center back pairing more than once yet this season. We've had Mason Holgate and Phil Jagielka. We've had Mason Holgate and Kurt Zouma. We've had Michael Keane and Kurt Zouma. It's been kind of a mess. And
sounds familiar.
Yeah, you see, you know, this causes issues, especially in communication.
Yes.
Where one guy will blow an assignment, and he's not telling his teammate that he's headed upfield, and you need to mark this spot. And on set pieces, Jordan Pickford is not used to communicating with these players yet, and so I think there could be some joy there for Fulham, particularly with Mitrovic in the middle. And this may become evident as we talk a little bit more, but I think there's going to be goals in this game.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that. I forgot to mention that whoscored.com predicts 2-2. So just keep that in mind. So they're predicting goals too. All right. Now let's talk about Everton's attack and Fulham's defense. And let's just say I'll put my hand up and already say I agree with you, because I know you're going to say Everton's attack because Fulham's defense has been bad. The one thing that I do want to mention about Fulham's defense, you guys talked about this a little bit on your podcast. I'm glad that you mentioned this. Main player that has been out that I think has affected the defense has been Tim Ream. And Tim Ream is on the way back. He actually played 60 minutes in the Carabao Cup. I hope that he's available to play against Everton, because this goes back to what you just said about Everton's defense. Fulham's lack of communication, calmness, that all comes from a leader, and the leader is Ream. And until they get Ream back, I think we're going to continue to have these communication problems, these errors. He's that important to how Fulham play defensively. And I didn't realize how much it was. We just started talking about it. I was, you know, again, I wasn't really giving it as much stock as I should have. And it's really self-evident that Fulham miss Tim Ream. But even with Tim Ream, you definitely, in my opinion, you get the advantage. But I'll want your thoughts on this as well, obviously.
Yeah, so the one thing that I will say about Fulham's defense is I think the players are better players than they're getting credit for. I really like Alfie Mawson. I rate Callum Chambers. Everton were actually interested in Joe Bryan there for a little while last season.
Right.
So I think that there's more talent there than people think there is. It's just a matter of getting everybody together and on the same page, which, as you mentioned, is something that Tim Ream could probably help with.
Yep.
Is Tim playing? He's playing on the left side, right? Not in the middle?
He is playing on the left side. And like I mentioned, he was our player of the season. And one of the things that Fulham have continuously done is play the ball out from the back. And sure, he's excellent at doing that. And without him, then you try to see players like a Chambers, like a Mawson, try to do it, and even Maxine Le Marchand, and they're just not as confident as, say, Ream to do it. So that to me is one of the reasons why he's been sorely missed, because they have the style that they want to play, and there just is that lack of continuity without him. So hopefully he'll be back for this match. We'll see. Like I said, he played 60 minutes yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday, so we'll see.
Yeah, and that being the case with that kind of up in the airness of Fulham's personnel, and just Everton's very settled in the players that they want to use in attack.
Yeah.
It's any number of Richarlison, Theo Walcott, Chink Tosun, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and then Gylfi Sigurdsson to some extent. And the attack is extremely fluid. It's extremely fast and athletic. And Everton's wingers will be in behind your defense before you really realize what happens. I think Theo Walcott makes a big difference in this game, coming down the right wing. Because he's looked to be in excellent form this season, and he's a player who he works so well off the ball. He does not need the ball to make a difference. He just kind of appears in front of goal, and all of a sudden you're in trouble. Richarlison kind of at this point needs no introduction in terms of his effectiveness. I think really where the game could be won and lost is depending on who starts at the number nine for Everton. Chink Tosun is really good at a lot of different things. He's just not great at any one thing. And if the Blues can get him kind of fit and firing, it'll make a huge difference.
Okay. Well, now let's go to the battle in central midfield. And I just want to mention one player that is still injured. I do not know if he's going to be available for this game. I was hoping he was going to be available for this game, and that's Tom Kearney. He's been injured with an ankle injury, so that would be a big difference if he's available to play. We shall see. So want to get your thoughts. Who has the advantage here in central midfield?
I'm going to give Fulham the slight edge. I think that may surprise some people, but I've watched every minute of Everton so far this season. And while the players individually are very talented, the way that they fit together has been kind of a problem, which I didn't really expect. But I don't know that playing against Sarri and I believe it's Anguissa and yes. Tom Kearney is really a good place for them to get back on track, because that's, you know, they just Fulham just came up from the Championship, but that is a top half of the table midfield in the Premier League.
I understand that. All right. Let's talk about the coaches. I find this one fascinating. You've already talked a little bit about Marco Silva and Savisa, again, getting his feet wet in the Premier League, learning the Premier League, but did an incredible job for Fulham in the Championship. So I'm just curious your thoughts on this. Who has the coaching advantage, or is it even?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Because Jokanović has been with Fulham for a little while now, even though he hasn't been in the Premier League. While you look at Silva, he's just been here a couple of months. And there is kind of this undercurrent among some people where they question Silva's resume, if you will, because he had Hull City a couple years ago playing really well. They nearly saved themselves from relegation, but they did go down. Then there was an acrimonious departure from Watford, where they started the season with their hair on fire, were well into the top half of the table and spent some time in the European spots. And all of a sudden, Everton came calling when they fired Ronald Koeman, and apparently Silva's head was turned, and Watford really dropped off, and he got himself sacked, which I question the fairness of that decision by Watford. Yeah. But there's kind of a sense in which Silva still needs to prove himself, despite showing that he can get his teams playing really excellent football. I think it's a pretty even matchup in the end, if we're going to kind of score it. I think Jokanović has the continuity edge. He has the experience edge in terms of with one team. But I would tentatively say, and this is no disrespect intended, but I think Silva's probably a little bit better tactically speaking. But that gap is narrowed by just Jokanović knows his team so much better than Silva does.
Like I said, he's still learning the league, and it's pretty obvious. Like I said, here we are. We're talking about him changing formation. So he's trying to figure out how to best play his team each and every week. And it's funny because there has not been a settled starting 11. So he's still figuring out what he has and what works best against each opponent. So we've been talking about it. It's almost like we used to joke years ago about Felix Bingo when they have Felix McGath, and you never would know what the starting 11. It's a little bit like that now with Fulham, because I think he's trying to find his best team. But I also think he's also matching up against the opponent. So there's a little bit of, I think, both going on there. So I understand where you're going on with Silva, you know, having an edge, slight edge over Jokanović as he learns the league and also learns his team what he can and what he can't do in the Premier League compared to the Championship. All right, let's go to my section of predictions. Obviously, we're going to end with your prediction for the match and mine, but let's start with this. What does Everton need to do to win this match? How do they win it?
So this is going to seem a little bit counterintuitive, but I think that Everton can win this match by defending well, because Fulham's attack is the part of their team that concerns me the most. And Everton showed, you wouldn't really know it by the scoreline from Sunday, the 2-0 loss to Arsenal, but they really defended much better than they had earlier in the season. And I think that we may see our first instance of the same center back pairing in two games in a row, and Michael Keane and Kurt Zouma. And so I think that if Everton can kind of keep Alexander Mitrovic under wraps and not let Andre Schürrle shoot 55 times a game or whatever it is he's averaging, that's really going to be key, because the fact of the matter is, against Fulham's defense and with the talent that they have, Everton are going to get their chances really in this game. I feel no matter how the game shakes out, there's going to be opportunities for Everton to score. So if they can keep Fulham under wraps on the other end, I think that's the big key for me.
Okay. Now I'm going to do something that most of my guests don't like to do, be in the shoes of the opposition manager. So I'm going to put you in the shoes of Slavisa. What would be your approach to beat Everton on Saturday?
I would try to play the ball through the midfield as absolutely as much as possible, and really put pressure on Everton's center backs. Like I've mentioned several times now, the talent is there in Everton's midfield. They are positionally suspect, though. They really, particularly Idrissa gets over aggressive in his attempts to win the ball back. And what happens there is Gay will kind of run around like a chicken with his head cut off occasionally. And then Morgan Schneiderlin will feel like he has to cover for Gay. And all of a sudden that leaves huge swaths of the field open. And so Fulham can really take advantage of that by forcing the issue in the midfield. And I think that they have the ability to do that too. And that really concerns me.
Okay, excellent. All right. Let's end with predictions. What's your prediction? And I'll share mine.
So I'm very tempted to go with who scores prediction, but I feel like that's a bit of a cop out. So I'm actually going to say 3-2 to Everton.
Okay, it's funny. I was thinking the same thing. It's easy to go 2-2, but I'm actually going to go with a Fulham victory, and this is the reason why. And it has to do a lot with how Fulham played in the last match when they played Watford. It almost felt like a continuation of playing Manchester City in the first half, where Manchester City were so dominant, and Watford played much better than Fulham in the first half. Then Savisa made changes, and we found another way for Fulham to play. That's what gives me encouragement that if things go wrong against Everton, that he has the ability to make the changes that he feels will change the game. He's already shown it. And I also like the fact that I've already mentioned to you that he was willing to experiment with a 3-4-3 in the Carabao Cup. I don't know if he's going to use that against Everton, but that just got me to think, okay, he's really trying to think of ways to fix this team defensively and also going forward. Another way to play, because our big thing, Chris, has been there's no plan B. I think right. He's trying to look for a plan B, and I think he's possibly coming up with some solutions for a plan B, because that's been our big thing. He just has one way, plays the 4-3-3, and that's it. Well, now we've seen the 4-2-3-1, and now I've seen the 3-4-3 in the Carabao Cup, and I've seen players come in for other players and things mixing and matching. So that's what also gives me encouragement against us. That's why I am going for a 2-1. This is not a disrespect to Everton, certainly not, because Fulham have not won at Goodison Park. So I understand the history there. I'm just looking at what's been going on with Fulham, and I just think this is an opportunity. It could very easily be the whoscored.com score. It could be yours as well. I just think that there's going to be goals in it. And I'll leave you with one thought, because I know you guys talked about this on your show, and you were curious about Ryan Sessegnon, and I think we can end talking about that. One of the reasons why I think he's even searching for all these different formation changes and looking at things is he wants to get his best players on all together. Sure. And Luciano Fietto has played fairly well to go along with Sherlin Mitrovic. And I've always said that Ryan Sessegnon deserves to be up front. But here's the thing. If you maybe tweak the formation, change the formation, maybe move some players around, there's the potential to have Sessegnon in there up front or somewhere else. And I don't like him as a left back. I don't know. Maybe if he plays three at the back, he becomes a wing back. So it's getting me to think that Ryan Sessegnon, Savisa is trying to find different ways to utilize him. He wants him in there, but he also likes what he has up front. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I was sitting here thinking, you know, a 3-4-3 really feels like it would play to Sessegnon's strengths, because he wouldn't have to play all the way up front. You could put him at that wing back position, and he can still impact the attack.
I was thinking about that this morning after the match in the Carabao Cup. I said maybe a left wing back would be a good place for Ryan Sessegnon.
Yeah, and you kind of, I think I mentioned this on our podcast. It was a little strange to me that I believe Sessegnon spent most of last season playing up front.
He did.
If memory serves. And then you move him back down the field to a more difficult position at the same time you're playing more difficult games.
Yeah.
That had to have been hard on him, and I think the best way to kind of further his development and also at the same time get Fulham results is figure out ways that you can move him up the field.
Right.
That being said, and I know we're probably running out of time,
yep.
I don't know that back three is the greatest idea against Everton, just because of how devastating we can be down the wings. I think that if your wing backs are pushing high up the field, like I suspect that Sessegnon would be, I would not want to leave all that space in behind the defense, especially at Goodison with Richarlison and Walcott on the field. I think that might be a little bit dangerous, but going forward for Fulham, I think that's certainly something that should be experimented with.
Right. And that's what I was more talking about. Like I said, I don't know if he would use that at Goodison Park, but I'm saying moving forward, the fact that he's considering using three at the back actually excites me. So that's kind of why I brought it up, because I was also thinking about how can he utilize Sessegnon and still play Vietto and just move the parts around, because there are some talented players there. And I think he's just trying to figure out how to get them all on at the same time and also be effective. All right, my friend, let's go ahead.
No, the last thing I was going to say was I would be interested to see which of your midfielders would drop out in that case, because, you know, you with the 3-4-3, you have to go with two central midfielders.
I know. And we, you know, and again, we've already been talking about what happens when Tom Kearney returns. So that's also another thing. But you know what? It's a good problem to have, you know, when you have players that you have to mix and match and you have to figure out how to fit them all in. That's a good problem. And obviously in your situation with Everton, when you get your injured players back, that will be a benefit to you.
Indeed, and I think we're looking forward to having that kind of problem rather than the current one. So,
all right. Well, Chris, listen, thank you so much for joining me. We went a little bit longer than I thought we would, but I just want to thank you for your time. And please tell everyone a little bit about your podcast one last time, and also how they can follow you on Twitter, and also the podcast itself. How can they reach it?
Yep. So School of Science Radio is available wherever podcasts are sold. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Spotify and iTunes, of course. It's a weekly show we'd like to release on Monday morning so we can kind of talk about the game that happened that weekend, anything going on in Everton land. We will also preview the next week's match. You can follow us on Twitter at SOS Radio RBM. And the RBM just stands for our affiliated website, which is royalbluemercy.com. Yep. And, you know, it can tend a little bit towards the irreverent. A couple of guys on there I've been good friends with for a while now, so we kind of have a lighthearted and casual tone. But we're looking forward to getting this thing up and going. We're on our fifth episode, and we have really enjoyed it so far.
Well, I enjoyed listening to it. Maybe I disagreed a little bit about the Fulham part of it. But, you know, hey, I mean, you're entitled to your opinion. I understand why you guys were focused on the defensive. Listen, it makes sense. I get it.
And we kind of like to mock our upcoming opponent, no matter who it is. So we mocked West Ham just
recently. I know.
And then we spent a lot of time making fun of Petr Cech. So I don't think that tactic's going to change, even if it did backfire.
Not a problem, my friend. Listen, I still enjoyed your podcast. I really did. And I learned something about Everton. And that's also why I definitely want to recommend everyone listening to your podcast, because you can really get a lot out of it. I know you're just early on, but you're doing an excellent job. So
appreciate that.
All right. Not a problem. Well, let's wrap this up. For my guest, Chris Stouffer, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.